89.3.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. Now, the provision of $8.8 billion of funding for global health assistance will be directly impacted by the resident of the White House, and this will affect governments and NGOs in Asia. Now, in Asia, women continue to need the support and services of national agencies and NGOs. Maternal mortality remains high. An estimated 132 million women in the region had an unmet need for contraception. 15 to 68% of women in Asia Pacific have experienced physical and or sexual violence at the hands of a partner in their lifetime. And by the age of 18, one in seven girls in the region has given birth. So will Asia's healthcare service providers for women be impacted by US President Donald Trump's re-election? Was it affected by the failed attempt to impeach him? Joining us with his insights is Jonathan Rux, Senior Director, Policy and Advocacy at PAI, which is a Washington, D.C.-based global organization which champions policies that put women in charge of their reproductive health. Thanks for joining us today, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me, Howie. I appreciate it.
So some of us might not be too familiar with this policy before we talk about its effects in Asia. This Mexico City policy slash global gag rule slash protecting life in global health assistance. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. So as an advocate, I refer to the policy as the global gag rule because it's really silencing organizations' ability to provide comprehensive services, healthcare services. What this policy says is that if you want to work with the U.S. government and you want to accept U.S. global health assistance, you have to make an agreement that even with your own funding sources, so funding that you might raise from other donor governments or other private foundations, you have to say that you are not going to provide comprehensive abortion services, you're not going to provide any information, you're not going to refer any women, and you're not going to advocate for the liberalization of abortion laws within your own country context to accept this U.S. funding.
That's a bit odd, if I may, as a layperson, that the politics is bleeding into the healthcare.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. And I think your reaction to the policy is the way that a number of our in-country partners and providers feel, who don't understand how the U.S. government can say what can and cannot happen with other donor funding.
So the effect of this in Asia, the global gag rule, as you're calling it.
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of effects globally, and I think in this region in particular, we're seeing access to services cut off. So providers unable to operate their clinics and provide birth control for women and girls who want to receive a contraceptive commodity. A lot of stigma and discrimination against abortion as a service where it's allowed in a number of countries. And then an undermining of coalitions who've come together, like I said, to advocate for more liberalized abortion laws in their own country context. All of this is being undermined or completely lost in some countries.
So where do we stand at this point? So Trump was not impeached. He may be reelected. What might be happening with this particular rule?
So the challenge with this policy is that we need a new administration to make it go away in the long term. This is a policy that comes into place when we have a Republican in the White House and goes away when we have a Democrat. The challenge, however, is this administration has utilized a lot of tools to massively expand it in really harmful and impactful ways, in ways that we haven't seen under previous administrations.
Even if it were a Republican one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Republican Party that we're working with now has shown no indication that even if it was a Republican other than Trump in the White House, that they would repeal this policy.
Right.
Everyone was fully on board with the way this administration uses the policy to demonize and stigmatize women and girls' access to services, not just abortion, but even access to contraceptives.
What about alternative sources of funding, though, Jonathan? How large a contributor is the U.S. administration, the White House administration, in administering this kind of funding?
The U.S. is the global leader when it comes to providing global health assistance. So as a donor, the U.S. provides about $9 billion worldwide. The investments in the Asia region in particular are focused on sexual and reproductive health. And in terms of donors in that space in this region, the U.S. is one of the leaders. So the impact can be large. And the challenge that we have before us is we need to work to mobilize other country governments to invest in this space, and some country governments are. Canada has made recent commitments to devote more funding to the neglected areas, including abortion, access to contraceptives, and ensuring that adolescents and youth can receive healthcare services. But that's going to take some time, and it's not going to be a seamless transition. So we also have to have a lot of honest conversations with country governments about investing their own funding and really taking control of their own priorities when it comes to health, so they're not left at the whims of these other donors and their shifting priorities.
Have you seen, though, the U.S. policy impact Asian government investments?
Yes. You know, as PAI, we're documenting this impact in a number of countries. So I've been to Bangladesh and Nepal. Colleagues are heading to Cambodia. And we're seeing how this policy comes up against country government priorities and investments. So when I was in Nepal, for example, I was sitting with providers who had worked when this policy was in place under previous administration to liberalize their abortion law, because they recognized that a large number of women were accessing abortion in unsafe conditions, and those unsafe conditions also lead to maternal deaths. So in order to decrease maternal deaths, they liberalized their law. Now I have to sit with them and talk to them about this policy and explain that the U.S. government actually doesn't care what your local Nepalese law says or why you may have worked to change that law. The U.S. government just now wants their policies and priorities to trump everything, regardless of the reason.
And you're seeing this region being impacted the most by this particular policy of the U.S.'s?
I wouldn't say the most, but I think like this country, this region, like other regions where there are heavy U.S. investments, we're seeing an impact, and that impact is playing out different in every country. So even Bangladesh, where I was last week, talking with providers who are so confused and scared about this policy that they think they can't even be providing post-abortion care in refugee camps or Rohingya women who want and need that service.
So I was going to ask you the biggest gaps and misconceptions about media covering this particular policy. I might want to say, We're not hearing a lot about it at all.
I think the challenge here is that we are up against the U.S. administration that is frankly lying about the policy and touts this message that there is no impacts and that business is continuing as usual. We know that's not true. The challenge also is that this is a really confusing policy, and you talked about misconceptions, and I think the biggest one is that we have the President Trump, we have the Vice President, we have the Secretary of State, who continue on the global stage to say that this policy is needed to ensure that U.S. taxpayer funding isn't used to pay for abortion. Well, if that's why they want the policy, then they don't need the policy, because with or without this policy in place, U.S. taxpayer funding can't be used to pay for abortion by law. The challenge here and the really egregious overreach is that this U.S. government is using this policy to hold hostage other donor funding and other donor priorities by saying, if you want to work with us, we are going to silence your ability to use any of that other funding.
Where can we go to get the truth, so to speak, as we write stories about healthcare? Earlier you said, well, the U.S. government's lying.
So as PAI, we are here as a resource. We are looking at this policy and documenting its impact in countries around the world. And I think PAI, myself, we are always willing and ready to help make those connections and share these impacts that we are seeing, because we need to. We are heavily reliant on journalists to help get this story out and really help not just advocates in the U.S. and voters in the U.S., but also country governments and other providers understand this policy, understand how to work with this policy, not cut off services that are needed, but also really elevate this story of impact, which is playing out in really damaging ways around the world.
Find out more about the great work they're doing at PAI.org. Jonathan Rux is Senior Director Policy and Advocacy at PAI. Jonathan, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Howie.
Money FM.